Hello, I'm Scott Guthrie, and welcome to episode 2 of the Influencer Marketing Lab, a weekly podcast tracking the growth spurts and growing pains of influencer marketing. This week, I'm in conversation with Oliver Lewis. Oliver is founder and MD at The Fifth, a group which comprises an influencer marketing agency along with a social talent agency. We ask whether influencer marketing can ever dethrone TV as the largest advertising category. Spoiler alert, yes, we think it can. Our conversation also covers what it's like being owned by a mainstream media titan, The Fifth is owned by Rupert Murdoch's News UK, and how easy it was for The Fifth to get business case approval. We discuss the evolution of storytelling formats, the importance of nurturing a positive organisational culture, and finally, the pivot from creative-led strategy to a talent-led strategy. The Influencer Marketing Lab has been made possible through exclusive sponsorship by Tagger. Tagger is the number one data-driven influencer marketing platform and social listening tool. It's an all-in-one SaaS platform that helps users succeed in every step of the influencer marketing workflow. With it, you can discover the perfect influencers, research your target market, activate campaigns, and measure influencer success all in one intuitive platform. If you want to see how Tagger can work with you, go to taggermedia.com/request-demo. So, welcome back to the Influencer Marketing Lab. Firstly, a big thank you. Thank you so much for all of your very positive feedback on episode 1. I'm thrilled by the show's early reception. Long may this continue to build. To that end, on with the show. This week, I'm in conversation with Oliver Lewis. In March last year, Oliver founded The Fifth Agency, a creative and strategic influencer marketing agency. In February this year, Oliver followed up by founding The Fifth Talent Agency. The Fifth Group is owned by and sits within News UK, a stable of media businesses which include The Times, Sunday Times, Wireless Radio and The Sun. Oliver leads the new group as managing director. The Fifth's clients include Tag Heuer, Undisputed Paris, Han Wine, Lucasaid, Kendo Beauty Group, and Boots. Prior to The Fifth, Ollie was Director of Digital Strategy for News UK. There he led commercial innovation, digital strategy, and product development. You're the founder and MD of an influencer marketing agency and an influencer talent agency, but what does your role actually involve?
I guess you boil it down to a couple of things. I think I'm there to think big, deliver big, but manage conservatively, which means that my focus is clearly on business growth, on the product, on the strategy. Because of our News UK ownership structure, obviously a huge part of my role means that I'm managing internal stakeholders as well and looking at the ways in which we can integrate more fully into the wider News and the wider News Corp global business. So a huge amount of that is looking at opportunities, is of course looking towards investment and how we grow the business. But actually, you know, the reason I've started this business is because I'm hugely passionate about the space and about marketing and about creativity. And therefore it means that I stay close to the business as usual and the day to day as well. So that means, you know, without stepping on my incredible team's toes, it's where appropriate and where I'm needed to support client pitches and to support and creativity. And the other actual thing here is that you can't be in this space if you don't passionately love being on social and understanding trends and talent. And one of those areas for us is and something that we've managed to almost democratize across the whole business is that when it comes to identifying new talent and scouting and shortlisting for clients and for brands, we all get involved. And that includes me, which means, you know, on a daily basis, you know, I'm absolutely looking for talent that I might want to suggest for certain campaigns. And I think that's something that I think is critically important across the whole business, because everyone has a different cultural background and experience, a different feed, and everyone should be able to bring that to our business.
There's a lot to unpack from your answer, and I want to dig into several areas you touched on. First of all, timing. I had to check back in my notes when preparing for this interview, because it seems though The Fifth had been part of the fabric of influencer marketing in the UK, certainly, for an eternity. Yet you only launched in March 2019. Was there any strategy behind your launch timing?
Yeah, I think it's turned out to be perfect time. But actually, I think the reason it worked for us is because we could see the sort of convergence of the space, the maturity. You know, you still had an influencer marketing that was still evolving. It's still evolving. It's still relatively immature. But it was long enough in the tooth to understand its trajectory to see where it was evolving, and in particular into those areas where I knew News UK would be extremely interested, i.e. the evolution of storytelling, the introduction of production, the cross-channel amplification route, and how actually, in particular, the content should be living in a multimedia world, but actually so should the talent. And I think for News in particular, and why they were interested to invest in this business, because we should be constantly looking to evolve the talent and the storytelling formats of for tomorrow. So as a traditional news business, always should be looking to future-proof. And I think that we offer a genuine opportunity and a route for them to do that. We're not necessarily going to be a silver bullet, but I think the timing is right for us to be thinking about how we need to evolve the storytelling tomorrow. If you're going to attract new audiences from a News UK perspective, then you know one of those routes is to change the storyteller, to change the format, to evolve. So the timing from a news perspective was very strong, but from our perspective, you know, purely in influencer marketing, it was just such, you could see such an incredible growth as it was starting to shift, but hadn't yet, from PR into a fully creative marketing channel. It hadn't entirely shifted from product into brand. And again, you know, and the evolution of storytelling was going to be critical to that. So I don't think you can necessarily pick the perfect time. I certainly don't think we're late. But if you look at the explosion over the last 4 years of players in this market, 190 in 2015 platforms and agencies in the market to 1,120 in 2019. So look, there's a huge amount of competition. And in order to stand out in that level of competition, you've got to find what I like to call the white space. You've got to find a product that is that step ahead, that has clean air. I believed at that time we could do that, and we had authority to do it. In particular, and that largely links to those points I just made, you know, around storytelling and creativity, but also around professionalism. You know, I think the market is, any market that's going through this this level of boom is going to, at some point, going to hit a crossroads where it, you know, trust will be the greatest commodity, and professionalism with it. So, you know, backed by News, we had that in abundance.
Thanks, Ollie. I want to scroll back a little, if I may, and dig in a bit more into your owners. The Fifth is owned by News UK, the publisher of mainstream media masthead titans such as The Sun, The Times, The Sunday Times. News UK, in turn, is part of News Corp. However, it seems as though you can't fail to open up a mainstream media article covering influencer marketing without it being negative in tone. How does this square with News UK ownership? And how straightforward was it for you to get your business case approved?
Look, I think you have to see through some of the headlines, and I think, you know, and look, there's plenty of them throughout the News UK titles. Times, Sunday Times in particular, cover it quite a lot. And it's not all negative. I think you have to read through the headlines and actually understand that with that amount of attention and increased media attention, it's very demonstrable of a market that is growing in both consumer minds, it's growing in loyalty of audience, and therefore attention. And that is something that a media business like News UK understands full well. I think that it also showed the opportunity for a professional player backed by a business of this scale globally to help it transition and position itself as trying to redefine that space. We set out very clearly a strategy that would take those learnings and take some of that bad press and actually think about ways to help professionalize and improve it. And so back to your original question, it wasn't particularly difficult, because I think when you look at the trends and you can see both how talent and content is being consumed, particularly across social, that is a space that this business would like to, you know, increase its footprint in. But increasingly, I think you just had to follow the money as well. You know, you had huge swathes of, let's say, the luxury market, which was, you know, critically important to and still is to areas of this business, and huge swathes of that ad revenue and budget were moving into this space. So on a number of different metrics and a number of different points, it actually, I wouldn't say it was easy, but it made a lot of sense, and it wasn't particularly difficult once you look at the market trend and positioning.
You've talked about creativity, you've talked about the evolution of content creation, you've talked about the evolution of storytelling and the evolution of production, and you've talked about professionalism within the influencer marketing space. What, though, are the main challenges in the near horizon do you think you face as a company and the industry faces more broadly?
So I suppose there's two ways of looking at that. Look, the challenges for us as a business, outside of, say, market challenges, but for the fifth, you know, it's how do we scale appropriately? I think the size of the opportunity and our ambition for influencer marketing is absolutely not isolated to the UK or even the EMEA market. I think many of our the agencies in our space are already realising that, brands certainly realising that. And as the shift towards bigger brands having a much more centralized influencer marketing strategy means that you should absolutely be looking to plan and execute globally. Now, we're doing that, but how you scale operationally into new territories will be a challenge for anybody in our space, particularly we're still a relatively small business. I think that's a daily challenge. And look, I think to accelerate, this is a space now that requires acceleration, and we're going to be doing that. But the challenge here is, as I said, is how you manage the core of your business and don't take too much risk in accelerating, but enough to realise the opportunity in certainly new markets. And there's an explosion of markets. The US is obviously incredibly mature, but Australia is coming up very fast. Across the Middle East, we know the market maturity of China and Asia, but there are some really interesting spots, particularly India and South America, where we should be looking to execute. We know we have a right to be there. But so for us, it's about scaling on a very internal level. You know, we're effectively a startup in 18 months young, and therefore culture is incredibly important to me. I think how you grow the business and maintain, we've got such an incredible team, such a great culture that's been developed by them, and how you maintain that, that's something that keeps me up at night. You want to maintain that. That's what's winning us this business and allowing us to deliver such great work. So culture is really important. And then from a market perspective, really, Scott, you know, as we discussed, it's, you know, measurement's going to be critical for this space. And there is, as we accelerate to more of a full funnel proposition, you know, how do you truly measure longer term advocacy? How do we ensure that measurement is more standardized across the space? I think we all collectively as an industry have to solve that. I think it's very easy to have a point of difference in your own independent measurement solution. But actually, you know, we've got to prove the efficacy and the ROI against influencer marketing as an industry. And that will require some standardization. That requires some robust practices in brand measurement, as well as obviously the obvious gains we've made in the performance space and affiliate space. And so I think that the measurement will continue to be a big challenge. And I think trust, although we've taken huge leaps in trust over the last 12 months, it will always be, you know, we're talking to unlock bigger budgets, to become more central to your marketing plan, to pivot from being a creative-led strategy that might use talent to a talent-led strategy that can run in your above a line. Creatively, you know, that's the shift you want to make. Now, to do that, we've got to prove ROI, we've got to improve trust, we've got to standardize some of our practices. So, I think we're making leaps on that, though, right?
Well, there are certain pockets within the industry that are making leaps and bounds. Others that there aren't, sadly. And I think there are two gears within influencer marketing. There are those that, like the fifth, I would say, not just because you're being interviewed today, but I see that you see a very exciting future for the industry, but one that is wrapped up in the issues of you described of trust and of measurement and of scalability, you know, and of winning budgets from other channels and from getting new budgets from elsewhere as well. But I also see that there are, on the second gear, there are a lot of companies that are just starting out on influencer marketing. It's not yet part of their strategic capabilities to be able to work consistently and effectively within influencer marketing. And, you know, if you don't have the right sort of tools in place, the right structures in place, then you're not going to get the right sort of result. There's a danger of blaming the tool rather than blaming your ability to use that tool. So I think there is a need for our industry to come together, to coalesce around creating a unified voice that celebrates the best of breed and the best practices and the best case studies. We saw that recently with the Influencer Marketing Awards, and there's some great and worthy winners of categories there, but also that there were some, I think as a judge, there were some quite lazy entries that were put forward, and they're good at what they did, but they weren't furthering the industry and where the industry could land.
You know, that points to the evolutionary leaps, doesn't it? You know, we've gone almost in sort of influencer marketing 3.0, and I think it's exciting to see what comes next. But I think, you know, you're absolutely right. There'll be pockets of the market still stuck in 1.0.
This podcast has been made possible through exclusive sponsorship by Tagger. I particularly like Tagger's discovery tool because it lets you apply hundreds of different filters to their huge database so you can find exactly the influencers you want that perfectly match your campaign. I've seen agencies and brands discover high-value influencers in less than 1/4 hour. Tagger's affinity tool takes discovery a step further by showing you an influencer's brand affinity. What does this mean? It means you're able to partner with influencers who are most likely to enjoy your brand or product. Tagger focuses on their customer success. When you sign up to the platform, you're given a dedicated customer success manager. They guide you through everything, from onboarding to training to just checking in and making sure you're finding success with the platform. When you're running an influencer campaign, sometimes it can be difficult to measure your success. But it's easy to report your campaign data with Tagger. Their modular report builder lets you pull accurate, real-time data directly from social media platforms. You can also choose which metrics matter most to you and your clients, meaning you can customize the data that you show in your report. Something that can be overlooked when you're choosing an influencer marketing platform is the quality of the data. Tagger has direct API access to all major social media platforms. This gives Tagger users 100% accurate, real-time data that's gathered responsibly. You can't plan a good strategy if you're not looking at good quality data. If you're looking to scale your influencer marketing efforts, Tagger is a truly global solution. Its availability in over 10 languages and the ability to make multi-currency payments directly on platform gives brands a huge advantage when running multinational, multilingual influencer campaigns. If you want to see how Tagger can work for you, go to taggermedia.com/request-demo. The influencer marketing industry is moving along at such a lick that already furious rate of change has been ratcheted up through the COVID-19 pandemic. Comrade Vladimir Lenin once remarked, "There are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks where decades happen." And I wonder if this might be true for influencer marketing versus television advertising. TV advertising is the largest subcategory within global advertising spend. Pre-COVID-19 figures taken in February forecast that this year, 29 cents in every advertising dollar spent would be spent on TV advertising. But it's the direction of travel which is important. In 2017, TV advertising made up 34 cents in every dollar. A year later, it slipped to 32 cents. By 2019, it was 30 cents. By 2024, TV advertising spend is forecast to have slipped to 26 cents in every advertising dollar spent. Meanwhile, social media advertising is tracking upwards from a lowly 10 cents in every advertising dollar spent in 2017 to a forecast 17 cents in every dollar in 2024. Can influencer marketing ever take TV's spot as the biggest subcategory of advertising spend?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your considered response. They do say that brevity is a virtue, but those that say it probably weren't thinking about it in the arena of podcasting. Is there any way you could find it in your heart to expand on that question a little bit?
No, actually, it's interesting because there's so much in this as a topic. Because again, let's look at what you talk about. COVID at the top as being an accelerant. It did, and actually, it accelerated a few of those things. One of them was the awareness of the production value associated to talent. I think that's critically important when talking about this, because what you have in and in some respects, that's not just challenging TV. That's challenging the whole creative space. Of which you know, primarily, ad agencies set up to deliver your TV creative, maybe rethinking ways in which they can do that, and they certainly had to across COVID. And we had our own examples with some of our talent who were producing some amazing film using £250 drone cameras and creating stuff that really would happily live as a TVC. And Azran Badawi was an example of that. She created a film called Lockdown. One of our talent. So I think that's one thing. So I think that there was an accelerant towards understanding their value as producers, frankly, DOPs, videographers, artists in their own right, photographers, many of which, work in this space. So that was one thing. But I also think what COVID also did, has driven a change that will last. So there was a survey that came out throughout midway through lockdown that said 86% of those consumers asked. And now, look, this is interesting because this is largely coming there's consumer and advertising perspective. But of those asked across consumer pockets and indeed across the industry, that 86% would be spending their ad allocation on influencers through this outbreak. And actually that beat TV, and actually second to that, I think 84% was streaming TV. So I think that it's taken a greater foothold. And I think what we'll end up seeing actually is a blend creatively. But what's interesting that came out this week, which adds some more grey matter to that argument, is that you know, streaming TV and in particular SVOD and subscription-based video services, there's news that and certainly forecasts that will plateau in the near future. And of course, that opens up more of a blended commercial model. So you may see that Netflix starts more again, a greater exploration into ad funding models in the way that, you know, Spotify has been so successful at having a blended ad and subscription model. And I guess by doing that and creating more ad space, more opportunities for integration, then you may see a second boom on TV and certainly TV video related products. But I absolutely believe wholeheartedly that our space will continue to evolve down that route. And what we'll end up seeing is TV becoming a channel in the influencer marketing mix and not necessarily there to replace it, but it will support it and it will blend.
Yeah, I think in terms of, again, you know, not sort of be able to capitalize on the terrible pandemic that is COVID-19. One thing it has demonstrated is that influencer marketing has been legitimized as a communications tool. And you've seen influencers and influencer marketing agencies work with the World Health Organization, work with the United Nations, the Finnish government reclassified influencers as key workers. There are lots of other examples of this. And I think, going back to your point about sort of blurring on television and, you know, where the markets are, you have to go where the audience is. And, you know, the fact is that millennials, let alone Gen Z, are not watching free-to-air linear television. They're not reading newspapers. They're not listening to the radio. So the only way you can really tap into them and communicate with them and start a conversation, engage with them, is through social media. And who are they following on social media? They're following influencers. They're not following brands. They're following people like you and me, and they're following creators and storytellers. So the only way really to tap into someone below 35, 40 years old is to be on social media and is to be engaging with influencer.
Well, no, I think what COVID has done in some respect has amplified the need, the greatest need of all, which was community. And I think what you found in influencers is they're those, you know, they're sort of custodians really of that community in some respect. But that, you know, what we did as humans is we turned to those that we trusted the most for all kinds of needs, information and entertainment, your inspiration, support, but that real sense of community. And you've seen exactly that. It's legitimized them as genuinely important role models and parts of people's lives who are giving value back. That doesn't go away. You know, that now needs to be built on. And that's where the audience, and audience is absolutely where the audiences are. And that's driven by this sense of loyalty. It's driven by a sense of authenticity. And therefore, there probably will be a separation, right? I think there's a reset of the term influencer. There's a reset of that chessboard. I think what we've also seen probably through this period is a huge number of celebrity-based influencers actually drop off the map a little. And their roles have changed. I think what we absolutely did not want, we had no need or necessity for, was people shining a light on their privilege and their lifestyle, you know, through that period. So actually what you had is anybody that wasn't able to adapt their format to be sensitive to the time, and that included brands, has been a, you know, huge blacklist and culling. And I think their roles, and I think that role shifts. So we've essentially moved away from this kind of the manufactured Love Island influence, although it will still have a role. But I think towards much more authentic, culturally relevant talent, and those that have a flexibility in their style and their format and have a real relevance to a particular community.
I think you're right, Ollie. And I think that the key word that ran through that last answer was community. And what influence social media influencers bring is their creativity and storytelling. Yes, they bring distribution as well, obviously, through their follower numbers, but they also bring with them that community and that trust and that right to be able to talk with authority to that community. And not just talk at them, but listening to the responses and tailoring future content towards that community, really just taking note and nurturing them along the way.
I think that, you know, and what's powerful there for brands, and what I think, you know, many brands perhaps that haven't tested influencer marketing or perhaps haven't understood its evolution to date, they can tap into that. You know, what brands can't do necessarily, some do it very well, but they can't enter into conversations or enter into communities authentically and organically. It can look very contrived, but what they can do, they can enter those conversations and those communities through influencers, and they can do it very well. And they can borrow their authority to some extent. It needs to be a natural and authentic fit between brand and talent. We understand that. But I think that it allows them to swim in places that perhaps they couldn't do naturally on social in particular, but off channel. And I think we found that, you know, we had brands that had to react and to some extent had to adopt a new tone. Now, not everyone is brave enough to completely pivot their tone through a crisis period. You have to move very fast. And so I think in some sense, what we found is that those willing to, you know, use influencers and to partner with them through that period actually would have had huge benefit in that they were able to adopt their tone, respond sensitively, but do it without having to pivot too much of their overall brand strategy. So I think that there's a growing awareness now that brands can enter into interesting conversations and actually read the benefits.
And I think in just sort of latching onto that test and learn ability, there's a speed benefit through working with social media influencers as well, rather than creating a script and a full-blown television ad, which might take weeks and months, you know, in the planning in production and post-production process. But just testing out where you want to, you know, you said about the right to play in an area, but testing and learning and being agile enough to be able to capitalize on what works. And of course, not repeating what doesn't work and putting some more, maybe some advertising spend behind the stuff that does work.
The Edelman Trust report that came out through that period was quite interesting as well. And clearly there was, you know, there's rightly a lot of fear. You had 33% in that survey had said they'd already convinced people to stop using a brand they felt wasn't acting appropriately through the pandemic. I mean, that's a terrifying, that's quite a terrifying fact. And actually, but I think that if you could let that fear consume you, or absolutely you're right, you could test and through that. And I think just being able to, like I said, using influencers was an interesting halfway house. It allowed you to be reactive without having to put everything on the line. But I think one thing I wanted to pick up on, you just said there about how you could absolutely should learn from some of the activity you do with Sparsky and then apply paid to it. That is absolutely something that is an increasing trend in the space. And, you know, creating amazing content with influencers, but then licensing that content, which is now an increasing part of all of our roles, and ensuring therefore that you can create new assets for new channels using that content and applying paid to it. And, you know, TikTok very, very openly, you know, over the last sort of 5 or 6 months have been building their TV creative off talent and influencer content that, you know, that lived not just across TikTok, actually across all channels. And they were licensing that for distribution and applying huge amounts of paid behind it. As opposed to doing it through their organic channels. So in actual fact, they didn't do anything through the organic channels. So I think that's an interesting trend that again has been accelerated.
Thank you. That's perfect. I want to end now with a glimpse over the brow of the hill to the future. Are there any near-term trends that you are particularly excited about within the industry? And adversely, are there any trends that you are particularly anxious about?
Where do you want to start? Let's go
positive.
I think I'm really excited about social commerce in particular. I think it's evolved. It's another one. Our word of the day is accelerant. It's absolutely accelerated, I think, in the hearts and minds of brands. But I think the influencers and talent's role in that is really exciting.
100%. And if you compare the size of the industries, e-commerce is worth around $2.25 trillion a year. And a best guess estimate for the size of influencer marketing is around $10 billion a year, infinitesimally small in comparison. So the eyeballs are increasingly focused on e-commerce or social commerce, and this is where social media creators play such a pivotal role throughout the whole customer journey, from awareness through to consideration and ultimately through to purchase.
Yeah, quite. I mean, and then for those top sort of 5% that are able to transition, you know, after influencers here are entrepreneurs in so many respects, and they are brands and have the ability to transcend sort of content marketing for other brands and actually transition into their own product lines. And I'm super interested in that and excited in how product and brand can grow off sort of genuine relationship that talent have built with their audience. And I think that's exciting. I think through this period, and in particular for the future, gaming remains, it sounds crazy to think of gaming as a growth area, but actually I think in some respects it is, and certainly in the ad space, in the market, as a marketing channel, it is. And I'm excited about the role in which talent can play in that, and roll about sort of the growth of experiential formats and in-game formats, and how we can really learn from that piece of technology. I think that's an interesting market that has absolutely, and so new platforms will emerge in that space, and new ad tech is emerging in that space, and we're yet to figure out the role in which influencers really will play in that evolution. But I'm excited to see it, and we're thinking about it.
Any industry trends that you're concerned about or worried about?
Right now, it sounds mad, given, you know, I've come from a career in space where in digital advertising, digital marketing, the AI has played such a significant role in its evolution, in its efficiency. But I'm still concerned at the pace which AI will be introduced in all aspects of influencer marketing, and in particular, you know, let's touch on virtual influencers as well, because I just think we've just done so much hard work to build the authenticity and trust between sort of the talent, brand, and audience, and that's a very symbiotic relationship. It's a balancing act, and I fear that if we accelerate too fast into which is ultimately a human based medium into AI, that actually we muddy the growth and we distract from its core a little bit. I'm not saying it doesn't have a future in it. I think that would be crazy to suggest that, but I hope it's not in the near future.
In an earlier episode of the Influencer Marketing Lab, I interviewed Jim Lin, and we were talking exactly about this. And I met Jim for the first time in 2016, and it really was the kind of the Wild West there. Influencer marketers were making their decisions based on gut feel. There's little data to support their endeavors, especially the selection and then the measurement phase. Scroll through to 2019, early 2020, and it's all about the data. It's all about the AI. And I think, you know, neither approaches are correct. I think there needs to be somewhere in the middle, and that's where you need the contextual intelligence of that practitioner to be able to pull out the best results of the hard data, but also meld that hard data with the softer data, whether it is making sure the influencer have the same values as you and your brand, making sure that they have the same mise-en-scene as you and your brand, making sure they haven't said anything negative about you and your brand in the near or further past. Yes, you need to be data-led, but you also need to be empowered by human insight and human intellect. If we subjugate or outsource all of our decision-making to machine learning and to AI, then the industry is going to be bereft. And I think there's a big difference between being effective and being efficient. And I think to be effective, you need to combine the skills of humans and also data and the way the data is collected.
Amen. I mean, it's praise me. I think it's absolutely, we talk of it as art and science. I think the data obviously is important, but I don't want to repeat everything you just said. I think it's absolutely spot on. And I think it's critically important to be able to rationalize with the data, but I don't believe it should be the leading approach right now. Every single member of the Fifth is current, present, and contributes to talent identification, shortlisting, And I think that's the human element, and that's something we believe in. And therefore, otherwise, what I could do is just employ somebody, one researcher, to sit there and use technology and AI in order to generate. And I know that we would miss the mark. I'm absolutely convinced we missed the mark 99 times out of 100. So I'm convinced it's a blend.
Ollie, you'd be relieved to know we're in the final furlong, the last couple of questions. I want to touch on how, as a channel, we can professionalise, or even can we professionalise? And then I want to just find out how you continually learn and stay on top of things. But focusing on professionalisation, how can the industry professionalise?
It's critical, isn't it? And I think we have, as I said, we've made some real leaps in this space, but we've got to be sustainable, we've got to be credible, we've got to build trust, and all that comes down to, you know, a set of professional standards. Best practice in this space is probably yet to be defined, and I think that's the greatest challenge for us now is to probably put together a charter. In many respects, you know, I look towards the IAB gold standard as a benchmark for this. I think that was critically important at a time for digital marketing. And I think the market needs the same. You know, we need to come together as an industry. We've got to stop working apart and we've got to agree on some set principles. So that standardization of pricing and measurement is transparency of the way in which we operate throughout the chain. So, you know, what you will, what you do find increasingly with a market that is maturing at such a pace is that the supply chain becomes more convoluted. There are more players, and that all that does is add more grey and it erodes transparency. So, I think that we've got to get a grip on that. But it absolutely can professionalise. It already is. But I think it will take us as an industry and as not as individuals to achieve it. So I'd suggest, you know, immediately, you know, we should be thinking about what a charter around professionalism. We should be thinking about a charter around diversity and inclusion. We should be working together to achieve it.
Finally, Ollie, how do you continue to learn and keep up to speed with all the fast developments within the industry?
Read, share.
And are there any go-to magazines or online publications that you turn to?
I think an absolute breadth of both industry, you know, leading digital industry and marketing titles, obviously, the likes of, you know, in our space, Talking Influence and more broadly the Drum and Campaign, etc. But actually it's the interesting subsets of technology and marketing. Now, the way to do that, you could subscribe to 1,000 newsletters, which I'm sure we all do. But actually, I think what was more important for us was to harness the culture of the collective. So to not just for me to want to share, but for the whole business to do that. So actually, interesting, Slack has been a huge channel for us in that regard, and it allowed us to have a constant stream of consciousness of information related to trends, industry movements, technology, and to make sure that you read it. I mean, I always go into every day saying, you know, I have to learn something today. Every single day, what's the new piece of information that I'm going to take out of it? And I think it's a concerted effort to do that. If you don't stay on top of the market and the trends, I think it's very difficult to develop at pace. But so I think it's a cultural thing within the Fifth for us to be sharing insight and for us to be learning and discussing it. But on an individual level, it has to be a part of your day.
Ollie Lewis, thank you very much. Where can listeners find you on social?
So at the Fifth Agency on Instagram and similarly across LinkedIn and Twitter. So please come and visit.
Ollie Lewis from the Fifth, thank you very much for your time and great chatting with you. Thank you for listening to the Influencer Marketing Lab with me, Scott Guthrie. The podcast is sponsored by Tagger. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. For more information, visit influencermarketinglab.com. And if you want to see how Tagger can work for you, go to taggermedia.com/request-demo.